This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got partly sunny skies this afternoon, a high temperature of 70, currently 66 at O'Hare and 55 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. This is more like it on Wall Street today. Let's get all the latest from Bloomberg with Elisa Parenti.
Indeed, Cisco. Yesterday's steep sell-off had stock prices at the basement bargain, and so investors today are jumping back into the market, snatching up stocks at a discounted price. The Dow up 308 points, or 1.25%. NASDAQ gaining 1.5% now, or 115 points. The S&P higher by 1.25%, a gain of 35 points. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index also advancing more than 1%. But the U.S.-China trade tensions have not gone away. President Trump is looking to order up a fresh round of tariffs, extending them to all imported items from China. Analysts say that could put new pressure on Apple, Deere, and other U.S. companies that make their products in China. Maybe the outsized risk for big multinational companies has small business operators feeling more upbeat about their prospects. The National Federation of Independent Business reports its members were feeling as optimistic as they have in 4 months in April. Small businesses were upbeat on the economy, jobs, sales, and credit conditions. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
On the Noon Business Hour today, we will continue our education week. We're talking with people in the education field and about going to college. It's going to be very expensive. Is it worth it?
Travel Tuesday, some family trips in the Midwest that aren't far away, but still worth it. And remembering the flash crash from nearly 10 years ago. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Education Week continues here on WBBM. In this segment, we're discussing how to get into college the right way. Of course, in light of the scandal involving Hollywood celebrities and others, we're looking at school affordability with Frank Pomazzani, who is college affordability and financial aid expert and college counselor at Providence Catholic High School in New Lenox, and also the author of the book, The Right College, Right Price. Welcome to the Noon Business Hour, Frank. It seems that when you're talking about college now, it's really a matter of affordability to most people. Is that right?
Well, it's certainly an important variable. You know, when we are working with students and parents, I don't know how anybody can do college counseling these days without including parents, but working with students and parents together, we obviously want to help families find the right schools academically and also find the right schools socially, culturally. We often call it feel. But how can you possibly disregard the financial aspects of all this? It seems to me that financial fit has to be an integral part of the process.
There are some families who have their kids doing the question and answers that they do, years later when they're looking to get into college. I mean, there's a competition going on, it seems. What is your advice to people who are a little worried about getting one of their children or two into college?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at the concept of getting into college, families need to recognize that they don't have the image of getting into the highly selectives. Obviously, there is challenge to get into the highly selectives. When you talk about the Ivies or places like Notre Dame, University of Chicago, Northwestern, that's clearly the case. It's always been the case. They wouldn't accept many students. Just to give you an example, it's pretty normal today for students to apply to colleges and have those colleges accept 60 to 90% of your applicants. Except for the highly selectives. You know, they typically would accept less than 10% of the students that apply. So we know that's true. But there's so many thousands of institutions available that are excellent places that aren't the highly selectives. And there really is a place for every student. It's a matter of finding the fit.
Now, when we talk about affordability, though, or I mean, with the prevalence of student loans and so many scholarships and grants out there, when they're first going into the process, what are parents to figure out when they're talking about affordability?
Cisco, I think the most significant aspect really is assessing what it is they can actually afford on a yearly basis. You know, over the years when I've done presentations, I often would ask a general question, well, how much do you actually think you can afford to pay for college yearly? And invariably, people would tell me the amount of money they put aside in savings toward that end. But we also have tax credits where you actually pay less in federal taxes when you have your son or daughter attend college. Obviously, a real good examination of cash flow. People will often say, well, I don't have any money available to pay for college out of cash flow. But think about the amount of money you're expending on your child now while they're living with you. And then take that same amount that won't be there when they're living on the college campus. And so ultimately, typically, it's the combination of tax credits, cash flow, available savings, and potentially reasonable borrowing. I think there's a really big difference between excessive borrowing and reasonable borrowing.
I think it's sort of tough to have any discussion these days about getting into college without talking about this admissions bribery scandal. What do you tell parents who are maybe discouraged about that and maybe want to know, hey, how do I get my kid into college while being able to do it the right way and not the illegal way?
I would say, first off, they should ignore any of the potential attraction to doing anything that would be unethical, and in this case, not only unethical, but clearly illegal. It was an amazing story where somebody could actually get all of these individuals to participate in it, the student, the parent, potentially an ACT proctor, college coaches. So let's ignore any of those issues, and let's go through the steps, you know, just walk through the steps of literally looking and exploring. And we have this timeline that we talk about, an exploration phase, when students are somewhere in that back end of sophomore, junior year, where they're literally able to explore any colleges they want across the country. They're in total control. That leads them to how many are they actually going to apply. We use the number 10, up to 10 schools today. That's not uncommon. So that when they're in senior year, they're actually making college applications to a variety of different types of institutions. And then ultimately, those colleges are going to come back to them. They're going to come back to them with acceptance letters, and in many cases, scholarship and financial aid offers. And so that final phase, decision phase, really doesn't come until about January of senior year. So if you break it out in pieces and understand where you're at according to that timeline, it's so much easier to look at this entire process.
Thanks so much for the insight. Frank Palmisani, college affordability and financial aid expert, a college counselor at Providence Catholic High School in New Lenox, also author of the book Right College, Right Price. Coming up, we'll give you the 101 on financial aid. Education Week continues here on the Noon Business Hour. In this segment, we are putting a focus on financial aid. Education Week is sponsored by St. Xavier University. Sue Swisher is joining us, Executive Director of Financial Aid at St. Xavier. Sue, it's good to have you with us. Parents, I think, are overwhelmed by the financial aid picture. Give them, just a little bit of advice right off the bat before we get into some of the details of financial aid. Maybe a little encouragement, because it can be overwhelming.
Sure. Well, first of all, we encourage all students to fill out the financial aid form that becomes available in October, preceding the fall when they will be enrolling in school. At that point in time, they'll be filling out that form using their income taxes that they had already filled out. So they'll have a quick turnaround from the different schools in terms of what type of eligibility that they might have. But the key is to get that application filed up early and on time.
And that really opens up a lot of opportunities, especially with some grants, right? I mean, if you want to make sure that you have the opportunity to get as much aid as available.
Correct. Because, we have our, for people attending schools in the state of Illinois, we have our state grant program, and then there's federal grants on top of that. And then some schools also offer institutional grants and scholarships. So you want to get in early so that you can be considered for those different types of aid programs.
The revelations recently that some parents were trying to buy their children into really high-priced colleges, and leaving out a lot of people who probably are just as should be there as well. Did you know that this was going on? How did this happen?
Well, I don't think a lot of us knew that, you know, it was going on. I think it was, it was a surprise to a number of us that you know, when it did hit the news. You know, fortunately, I mean, there weren't that many schools across the country that got hit by this. But, it's something always to be apprised of.
Is there anything very different in the process of getting into college, going to college in the last 10 years or so?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, I think, in general, different schools have their different admission standards. They haven't really probably changed those, school-wide, over the years. So I think it's been pretty consistent.
When people hear financial aid, they think, I think mostly of scholarships, things that they don't have to pay back. But that's not always the case. Some financial aid does indeed have to be paid back.
Correct. I mean, there's also the student loan programs that students can take out student loans. Parents can take out loans. Students can also take out alternative loans. And then on top of that, there are student work options as well. Of course, with student loans, we always try to tell, families to look at the cost of attendance at that school, look at the type of gift aid that you're going to be receiving before you start thinking about the student loans, because you don't want to borrow any more than what you need.
Good advice. Thank you, Sue Swisher, Executive Director of Financial Aid at St. Xavier here in Chicago. Join us again at this time tomorrow as we examine the business of getting into college during Education Week here on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Still ahead, it's Travel Tuesday, planning a family trip in the Midwest. WBBM News Time 12:25, a check of Wall Street from Bloomberg, sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we have not undone yesterday's dramatic losses, but we have cut them in half. The Dow today up 351 points, or almost 1.5%, while the NASDAQ composite is advancing 1.75%, or 125 points. The S&P on the rise by 39. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is higher by 1.25%. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Much higher prices in the grains based on planting progress being way behind. 30% corn nationwide. Illinois is 11 versus a normal 82. Ohio 4 versus 47. So corn up there. Beans 9% versus normal 29. December corn up 12 and a quarter, 388 and three quarters. November beans up 29 at 856 and a half. Wheat for July up 9.5, 446 and three quarters. Higher prices across the board. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti. News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
Stocks are recovering from yesterday's big losses as President Trump says he's confident the trade war with China will turn out favorably for the U.S.
Travel Tuesday. There are great family destinations you can easily drive to right here in the Midwest.
We've recently passed the 9th anniversary of the market-shaking flash crash of 2010. We'll put it into a historical perspective.
A man accused in the hit-and-run of a young girl on a bike appears in Kane County Court.
On Wall Street, the Dow up 347 points. The NASDAQ is up 125, S&P up 39, and oil today up a little less than 1.5%.
The markets are higher based on what's happening on Wall Street. The Dow Industrials up 351, the S&P up 39, and the NASDAQ up 125.
We have beautiful sunshine in Chicagoland with a high of 70 degrees, and we are just about there right now, 65 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
Markets rallying today in the shadow of the U.S. trade tiff with China. We're joined by Paul Christopher, the head of the Global Market Strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Paul. Is this a trade tiff?
It's a little bit more than a trade tiff. I'd call it a trade dispute, not really a war per se. But look, tariffs, there's new tariffs. And not only that, they are tariffs that occurred even as the two sides were negotiating and continue to negotiate with each other. And worse than that, they are new tariffs that are hitting just as market participants were expecting a deal, not a backing away, but an actual deal. So that's what helps explain yesterday's big losses. Today's rebound, of course, the president sounding more optimistic, but I wouldn't put too much stock by that since, after all, it does take two to tango, and we have to see what the Chinese response will be. They have their areas of where they don't want to compromise, just as we do, and that seems to have been what's gotten caught in the machine the last few days.
It's almost like they're trying to threaten each other, and you can't really tell which way they're going here.
Exactly right. So if you recall, and many investors will recall, that last week we had down days and then we had up days. And we also had days when we started the market down and then finished flat or higher. So it's just a very volatile time right now. We would like for investors to stay close to their long-term target allocations. We wouldn't want to try to make trades in this market.
Well, and that's it. Long-term targets. It seems like we remind people a lot about this, but it's important when there's this sort of volatility that you do look at your long-term horizon, you look at the usual metrics that you're paying attention to, instead of the day-to-day either tweets or news stories or something coming from overseas.
Exactly right, Cisco. It's a very good point. Research will show that investors do best when they buy and stay in the market and not try to manipulate their positions based on the news of the day. It's just too noisy.
Although when you do have days like you did yesterday, I'd have to be excused if for looking
you
for
were
some,
looking at them.
I was looking for some bargains yesterday. I'll be totally honest with you, Paul. I mean, is there something too? If you got a big drop, maybe it's an opportunity.
Just gazing through, right?
Well, right. I mean, there's something to be said for what we call rebalancing, which is when the market's down and you've got some available cash, you look for values, you look for bargains. And then when the market's up a lot, then it's time to trim a little bit like you would a garden, take a little bit of cash off the top and put it to the side for when the market goes back down. That's how investors traditionally have made money in stocks over long periods of time.
I really like rebalancing as opposed to being a vulture. I like that.
Okay, so we'll change that in the book. So Paul, let's looking ahead. Where would you want to be planted right now for the after this other stuff gets dealt?
Well, what we want to do right now is stay as much as possible with higher quality investments. And quality is a sort of a subjective term. Let's define it in terms of companies that have cash and especially good cash relative to debt. So cash relative to debt of 30% is a healthy number. We want to be looking for those kinds of companies. Actually, a lot of them tend to be what we would call cyclical companies. So industrials, which have done poorly lately on the tariff stuff, but probably fundamentally are stronger than they appear. Also, information technology, we like that one, and consumer discretionary. Think about goods that you buy when you're flush with cash, maybe. Those are three sectors that we like very much right now. We also moved energy up to a favorable recently. We think that's another quality sector that you'll find based on that metric, again, of cash and liquidity relative to debt. So that's where we'd be looking to put money. We'd be looking to take money out of things like utilities, what we call consumer staples, think soap and detergent, those sorts of things, tissue paper. We would be looking to move money out of those, perhaps, and materials into those other sectors I mentioned.
Thanks for the analysis. Paul Christopher, head of Global Market Strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute, based in St. Louis. Up next, Travel Tuesday, family trips that are relatively close to home.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Kaler Luggage. This afternoon, we're discussing top family trips in the Midwest. We welcome Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief, TravelingMom.com, the leading independent family travel website based here in Chicago. Cindy, we're talking about places that families can get to pretty easily, right? So they don't have to get on an airplane?
Absolutely. Yeah. 3-4 hour drive and you're there.
Okay. So one, and my family and I were just here recently, in fact, is St. Louis, Missouri. We weren't expecting much. And it turns out there's some pretty cool stuff going on downtown.
There really is. You know, St. Louis is super affordable. It's probably 5 hours. You know, you can take the train there too, which is kind of fun if you're going with kids. But, you know, they've just redone. Did you go to the new Arch Museum?
We did. Kids loved it. And so did we.
Absolutely. And, you know, you used to have to, like, cross busy streets, and it was kind of icky to get to the Arch. Now it's all parkland, so it's really nice. They spent $380 million. They redid the museum. They added acres of parkland. and miles of bike and walking trails there. So it's really nice. But the coolest thing about St. Louis, I think, when you have kids, is the City Museum. Did you get to the City Museum?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it's scary for mom and dad. There's a lot of stuff to climb on.
Well, and exactly. And we came away with a few bruises, bumps and bruises when we were there. But it's awesome. It's an old factory building, old warehouse building, and they've left in a lot of the industrial stuff, and kids can climb on it and slide down it. They have a 10-story slide there that I was terrified of.
So what else? So if we want to go beyond St. Louis, are there other places, maybe heading north up to Wisconsin?
Yeah. Yeah, I like Madison. You know, people think about going to Milwaukee a lot, right? We do that a lot from Chicago, but I like Madison. The university is there, so there's lots of cool stuff to do around the campus. There's a huge lake in the middle of the city. The Capitol building there is just gorgeous, and there's free tours of the Capitol building, which, you know, I mean, even kids, I think, will find stuff there that they like. There's some history, but there's cool views when you get up to the top. You can walk outside and look and see the lake and all that. And in the summer, the farmers market is all around the Capitol on all four sides. It's huge. It's beautiful. You can get cheese curds. And, you know, like 15 miles to the west is the Mustard Museum. So if you go to Madison, you have to go to the Mustard Museum. It's in Middleton. You just have to go there to say that you were there. It's one of those things that you drop into conversation right at the cocktail parties. Oh, have you been to the Mustard Museum in Wisconsin? It's kind of fun. But actually, my favorite place in the Midwest is one that, you know, we're kind of snobbish about in Chicago, but it's Indianapolis. And if you haven't been to Indianapolis lately, you've never been to Indianapolis. They've completely remade the city. The whole downtown, the center of the downtown, is White River State Park. And it's incredible. It's gorgeous. The zoo is there, and the zoo is very nice. There are a couple of museums. The NCAA Hall of Fame is there, and up on the second floor, it's all interactive. So you can, pretend to hit a baseball or throw a baseball, and it'll tell you how fast you threw it. Kick a soccer ball, and it'll tell you whether you made a goal or not. So kids love that stuff. There's also minor league baseball there, which, I'm a baseball fan, but you know, National League games have really priced themselves out of most family budgets. So I love minor league baseball, and the stadium is right there in the middle of the park, right downtown. And, you know, when you're there, just about 3 hours to the south is Santa Claus, Indiana, and that's home to Holiday World, which is this charming, wonderful amusement park that's probably the most affordable one in America. And there's an amusement park with all the rides, and there's another side that's Splash and Safari that is a water park that has these giant water slides that you can put a whole family in the inner tube and you can all go down together. So even if the kids are a little nervous about it, you can be there with mom and dad. Or maybe, you know, if mom and dad are a little nervous, the kids can make you feel better about going down the big water slide.
Yeah, lots of great stuff. Thanks so much, Cindy Richards, Editor-in-Chief, TravelingMom.com, joining us on Travel Tuesday.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
On May 6, 2010, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell by almost 10%, just over a half an hour. Let's talk about that wildly volatile day and the lessons to be learned with Mark Hulbert, investment columnist at the Wall Street Journal and Barron's and MarketWatch.com in Washington. Mark, thanks for joining us today. None of us can forget those moments and the days after that. We've recovered from that, but there's always something in the future, right?
Well, that's right. I think one of the main lessons that we need to learn from that experience is that the market can do that kind of crash in a very short period of time. Perhaps it wasn't as big as a percentage drop yesterday, but we saw something similar. The market, more or less out of nowhere, dropped 600, almost 700 points in one day. We're seeing a lot of volatility on the way back up today, but we have to remember that this kind of volatility is an inherent part of investing, and if we find it intolerable, then we better reduce our exposure to the market so that we don't find ourselves spooked out of it because of that kind of volatility.
It looks as if, at least for the short run, we're going to be going up and down as the president is talking with China, and they're not getting any closer together, it doesn't look like.
Yeah, well, that's right. But, you know, I was thinking this morning, what are the other things that are on the horizon? It seems like there's a lot of brewing hostility in the Middle East. There's at least a report that President Trump is considering sending 120,000 troops to the Middle East, which would be extraordinary escalation of that situation. So even if the trade war were somehow resolved in our favor or in a favorable way, at least in the next couple of weeks, you still have plenty of other things that could come and sabotage the market or, at a minimum, create a lot of up and down volatility.
And Mark Hulbert, always good insight. Thanks for joining us. Mark is investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Past programs later today, a podcast at this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app. WBBM News Time 12:55, a check of the markets from Bloomberg, powered by ComEd's Energy Efficiency Program. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we continue to see sizable gains on Wall Street. The Dow up 354 points, or almost 1.5%. The Nasdaq gaining 1.75%, or 127 points. The S&P up 40. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is up 1.33% now. Worries about the impact on U.S. companies of the escalating U.S.-China trade war drove the losses that started the week. Now investors are taking some comfort after President Trump says he's still talking with China. There's milk, dark, and white chocolate, and now there's ruby chocolate. It's pink in color and made with a cocoa bean with a berry-like flavor. A Swiss chocolate maker is launching ruby chocolate in the U.S. as ruby cocoa. It still needs FDA approval to be called chocolate. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.